Okay, Rabbi, so we're on Daf Yudalid Amud Aleph. And we spoke yesterday at great length about the various songs that they sang in honor of those who received smicha, and who's worthy as a candidate for smicha, and who's not worthy. So what we're up to is the sugya of Egla Rufa, which we began yesterday. So let's make sure we're all on the right page. On Yudalid Amud Aleph.
Two dots down at the bottom.
Right, the two dots on the bottom. How many lines would it be up from the bottom? About 12? So you'll see Arifas Egla Bishlosha. And that's the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. And Rabbi Yehuda says we require 5 dayanim. Now let's just point out, as we did yesterday, because Don, you weren't here yesterday, so I want to just review this, that in the case of Egla Rufa, the Torah requires medida, which means that the Torah requires that we measure the distance between the slain body and the closest city to determine which city is responsible for the death of this slain body. And that city is going to have to send representatives to do what's called the Arifas HaEgla. Tana Rabbana, we learned in a Braisa with regard to Egla Rufa, and this Braisa is going to present the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon as to whether or not we require 5 members of the court to do the Medida, or 3 would suffice. And the first opinion is that of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, V'yatzu zkeinecha v'shoftecha, and the rest of the pasuk says, U'madidu es ha'arim asher svivos echalol, and it says here both zkeinecha in plural and shoftecha in plural. Zkeinecha means 2 judges, and shoftecha means another 2 judges. So the total number is 4, but we need a bezdin noter, we need an odd number, so we have to add a 5th judge, and therefore we come up with 5. So therefore, ein bezdin shakul, we can't have an even number, we can't have a tie in the decision, and therefore mosifin aleim odecha darikan chamisha divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Yesterday we had a long discussion, why would there be any debate about it? I mean, they're just measuring it, you know. Is Rav Shimon Omer's Kenecha? We only darshan the word Kenecha Shnayim, and we don't darshan the word Shoftecha to add another 2. So we're left with 2. But Ein Bezdin Shakul, it's an even number. Mosifin Alein Orecha Rekan Shlosha, so we have to make it an odd number. We add a 3rd. So the Gemara immediately asks Rav Shimon, Hai Shoftecha my Ovid Lei. What does Rav Shimon do with the word Shoftech? Apparently he uses it for something, and it derives something, and therefore it's not free to derive another 2 judges. Ahumi boile, that hahu means that one, meaning that word Shoftecha, mi boile, he requires it, lemiuchadim shebishoftecha, to teach us that it's not just regular judges, it's got to be the highest judges. Miuchadim means the special judges, which are judges that are members of the High Court of Israel, the Sanhedrin HaGedolah. So, for example, we said that there was a Sanhedrin HaKtana that's made up of how many judges? Who remembers? 23. That's not enough. We need the highest court, which is the court that's made up of 70 judges, and that's derived from the pasuk Shoftecha. Hence, the word Shoftecha is no longer available, it's no longer free, so to speak, to derive another 2 judges. So we leave Zekenecha, which means 2. And Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara asked, well, how is he going to derive the conclusion that the Shoftim have to be on this high caliber? They have to be members of the highest court. Miuchadim Shebishoftech. How does he know that? So the Gemara answers, Mizikne Zkeinecha Nafka. He has an extra letter in the word Zkeinecha. The Torah could have said V'yatzu Ziknei, the elders of. Why does it say Chaf Zkeinecha, your Zkenim, the extra letter chaf in the word zkenecha, instead of zikne zkenecha, is going to teach us that they have to be miyuchadim shebizkenim. If it would have been just regular, you know, rank and file shoftim, then it would have said zikne. But why does it say zkenecha? The emphasis here is on the highest zkenim, and that means the miyuchadim shebizkenim.
So he's using it for two purposes, to get to the fifth, to add to, but also they're asking him, then if you use those to add to, then how are you going for the Seder Gadol? So he's saying it's because it's this higher level of the word.
I don't know about the higher level, but I would say like this. Zikne teaches you two judges.
Right.
And then from Shoftei, you have another two judges.
Right.
Now, Ziknecha actually, with the extra chaf, that's coming to teach you that you need miyuchadim shebish of techa. That's the members of the high court. Rabbi Shimon, why doesn't he dash in the extra chaf of the words kenecha? It didn't have to say zikne, it could have said zkenecha. And he says, no, that we need this kenecha to teach me that it's got to be members of the high court. Why? Imi zikne. If it just would have said zikne without the extra chaf, hava mina, I would have thought zikne hashuk. It means any scholars, even if they're not judges. Because of one is kenecha. So the Torah with the extra chaf is now jacking up by one latch, one level, from zikne hashuk to members of the high court. But which high court? There are two high courts. There's a lower high court, that's called Sanhedrin Ketan, and there's a highest court, which is Sanhedrin Agdola. So Iks, if it would have just said, V'yatsuz keinecha, hava mina mi Sanhedrin Agdola, Haktana, it meant that you need a judge who sits on the Sanhedrin, but not the highest court. I need the extra v'shoftecha to jack it up to the highest level. Yuchadim shebishoftecha means it's not enough that they sit on the Sanhedrin Akhtan of 23 judges, they have to be members of the High Court of Israel of 71 judges. So if you chart this out, I don't have a whiteboard right here, then you have three different levels. You have what's called Zikne Ashuk on the lowest level, then you jack it up to Zikne Sanhedrin Akhtan until you get to the highest level, which is Zikne Sanhedrin Agdola. So we're going to need now a number of different psukim. We're going to need the extra chaf of zkenecha to jack it up from the lowest level, which is called zikne ashuk, to the next notch above, which is Sanhedrin Akhtano. Then on top, I need the pasuk vishoftecha to take me one step higher and require that these kena be members of the High Court of Israel of 71 judges. I no longer have a pasuk that's free to add to the number of judges on the court, because I only have the word zikne to teach me two zkenim, and any other pasuk is going to teach me the status of the judge in qualitative terms, but not the number in quantitative terms. So now the Gemara goes back to Rabbi Yehuda, and the Gemara asks, well, how can Rabbi Yehuda use the word shoftecha for quantitative purposes to jack up the number of judges on the court? Don't we need the word shoftecha to teach me that we need miyuchadim shebishoftecha, that it's not enough that they're members of the Sanhedrin Akhtana, we need them to be members of the Sanhedrin Agdola? So the Gemara answers, Gomar zikne zikne. He has a gzeirah shavah from the parish of Parhelim Dover Shel Tzibur. If you recall, this we did last week, that in the parish of Parhelim Dover Shel Tzibur, we require, maybe we could just close the door, I heard the shofar already, so I don't have to hear it a second time. I don't know, maybe you have to hear it a second time. Oh, I see that doesn't help anything. Okay, so the shofar will hopefully awaken us to become Zkenim. I don't mean old people, that will become even without the shofar. So what does it mean here? Zikne, zikne, just like in the case of Parhelim Dover Shel Tzibur, where the Torah says, V'samchu zikneh ha'idah yedeihem, we know that zikneh ha'idah, in the case of Parhelim Dover Shel Tzibur, as kenim, members of the high court. And we had a whole discussion about that last week. ha'eda, right, the highest court. So too, in the parasha of Egla Rufa, where it says v'yatzu zkeinecha, we require the same level and status of zkeinim. Malahala, just like in the case of smicha zkeinim al rosh parhelim dov shel tzibur miuchadim shebeit, that has to be members of the Sanhedrin Agdol. Afkan here too, linyan Egla Rufa, we need miuchadim shel zkeinecha, and that we derive from the word zikne. Then the word shoftecha is superfluous, it's available, it's free, and we could use it to derive an extra two judges on the court. So the Gemara now has a problem. If indeed Rabbi Yehuda had this gzeirah shava, and maybe the Gemara is not so happy here about this gzeirah shava, because there's a slight difference in the formulation of the word grammatically. It says in the case of Parhelim Dovid Shavu, it says v'somchu zikne. Here it says v'yotzu zkeinecha. So maybe the Gemara has a little bit of an inhibition here, a little bit of a hesitation to accept this gzeirah shava. But the Gemara says logically, iyolif, if Rabbi Yehuda actually accepted this gzeirah shava, is leilif kulei mehasam. You remember that Rabbi Yehuda's opinion was that in the case of Parhelim Dovah Shel Tzibur, we require five zakenim. So the number five is written in stone. It's explicit in the case of Parhelim Dovah Shel Tzibur. Now we have a gzeirah shava equating Egla Rufa with Parhelim Dovah Shel Tzibur. Well, in the context of that gzeirah shava, we should be able to derive the number of judges that we need, and that is the five judges. So then why does Rabbi Yehuda need the pasuk zkeinecha and the pasuk shoftecha, zkeinecha in plural to teach you two judges and shoftecha in plural to jack it up to four judges? Why doesn't he just simply go straight for the jugular and derive that from the gzeirah shava of zikne zikne from parhelim dovah shel tzibur? So the Gemara now assumes that Rabbi Yehuda does not have this gzeirah shava. Let's drop the ball on this gzeirah shava like a hot potato. Drop the gzeirah shava, and he holds like Rabbi Shimon, and we need the word shoftecha to teach me that this zkeinim have to be members of the high court, miuchadim shebeshoftecha, they're members of the Sanhedrin Agdola. Nevertheless, he's able to use the word shoftecha to derive two different conclusions. One conclusion regarding the status of the shoftim, meaning they're members of the high court. Number two, requiring the numbers of the shoftim. How so? How can you derive two conclusions from one word? So the Gemara says, vav vishoftecha liminyana. There's an extra vav in the word vishoftecha. It could have simply said, v'yotzu zikne shoftecha, the zkenim of your shoftim. The vav is what we call a vav hamachalik. It separates between two words. And the Torah is telling you, with this vav hamachalik, that just like zkeinecha teaches you two judges, the vav of vishoftecha teaches you that you need another two judges. That's called the minyana. And that jacks up the number from two to four. And then we add a fifth.
Doesn't the vav usually change the tense of a word from...
Like, can you give me an example of that?
Past or present, but it's the opposite.
Can you give me an example of that? I'm not okay. So familiar.
Okay,
with that. But see if you can come up with an example, and then I'll try to answer your question. I'm not familiar with that. So, Rabbi Shimon, why doesn't Rabbi Shimon use the vav of the shoftecha to teach me that you have to jack up the number from two to four? And the Gemara answers, vav lo darish. This is like the end of the. Of this part of the sugya, meaning if you don't have the vav, because vav lo darish, meaning if the vav can be included in what we call the pshuto shel mikra, then we don't use it for a drasha. This is something similar to what we learned earlier in this very same chapter here in Sanhedrin, that sometimes the Torah says something legufe, you know, just to simply present it. And the vav is justified. It's not an extra vav. And therefore you can't use it for a drasha. Okay, now ad kan hakofa aleph. Based on this issue about whether you darshan the vav, we can now produce the debate between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda darshans the vav. So he has the word Shoftecha as a superfluous word to add another two judges, and Reb Shimon doesn't have the Vav as a drasha, and therefore he needs Vishoftecha to set up the status of these Canaan. Now we're up to Hakofa Beis. At this point, the Gemara wants to know, why not jack up the number of judges with another two words in the same pasuk that are both written in the plural, and they each should teach us another two judges. Elameata, Elameata means now, according to what you've said, that everybody agrees Zekeinecha, since it's in the plural, it establishes that you need two Zekeinim, right, two members of the court. Well, let's look at the very next pasuk in the parasha of Egla Rufa. That's in Dvarim Chaf Aleph, and the pasuk says V'yatzu Zekeinecha V'shoftecha U'madadu. So the first part of the pasuk says that there are Zekeinecha and Shoftecha, but then it says V'yatzu in the plural and U'madadu in the plural. Why not apply the following logic, that V'yatzu in the plural teaches me another two judges, and U'madadu in the plural teaches me another two judges, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda Hare Tisha, he started with four and he added a fifth. He should really start with eight, right? 2, 4, 6, 8, and then add a ninth. Or Rabbi Shimon, he started with two. Now we're going to add another two, and then another two, and then we get up to six. Hare Kan Shiva, we're going to end up with seven. So the Gemara now gets into a heavy discussion regarding the mitzvah of Medida. And just by way of introduction, let me ask you for your knee-jerk response to the following question. Let's say I knew exactly which was the closest city to the slain body that was found. It's not equidistant between two cities. It's literally on the outskirts of one city. It's inches away from the boundary. Would I need a medida? What would you say? What's the purpose of measuring? You know, in football, we have to measure in order to find out whether you need a first down, right? So what's the purpose of measuring here? Anybody? What would be your knee-jerk response?
It would seem like there's no purpose.
No, okay, you're right. That's the right answer. But I mean to say, in general, what's the purpose of Medida? Not in my strange case. To really determine and clarify which is the closest city. But now Reuven says very well, if the slain body is mamish on the outskirts of the city, the next city is 5 miles up the road, I don't need Medida. Medida, there's no separate halach of Medida. Medida is not a ritual that's absolutely required. It's a means to an end. It's a system of clarification. So the Gemara says, look at Asanya, we have a braisa in Mesechta Sota, and the braisa says V'yatzu. Why does the Torah use V'yatzu in plural? To tell us a chiddush hein v'lo shluchav, shluchan, that they, the Zkenim, that was sent from the Sanhedrin Agdola all the way from Yerushalayim down to this point where they're going to do the Egla Rufa, they have to do the Medida, and it's not enough that they send representatives. They have to be personally involved in Medida. Again, if Medida is only a means to an end to clarify and establish which is the closest city, why is it so critical? You know, let them get experts, you know, a referee from football. You know, he's even better at Medida. Not only that, it says, U'madadu, afilu nimtza be'alil la'ir. Okay, now here we turn to Daf Yudalit Amid Beis. What's ba'alil sheba'ir? We found the dead body right next to the city. Alil means something that's crystal clear. It's revealed. And you'll see this in different Masechtas and Shas, that the word Alil means it's clear. So here we know, without a shadow of a doubt, certainly this body is closest to this city. It's on the outskirts of the city. Nevertheless, Tzorech Lasok Medida. You still need a Medida. So what do you see about Medida Rabosai?
It's mandatory.
Mandatory, but is it a means to an end or an end to itself?
An end to itself.
It's an end unto itself. It's not just a means to clarify and measure exactly which is the, you know, you have a whole list of candidate cities, which is the closest. No. That's not what Medida is. Medida is part of the Maisa of Arifas HaEgla. Arifas HaEgla is not just when they chop the head off. It's the Medida itself. The Medida itself is an act which is part of the process, and it's absolutely indispensable. We cannot do without it.
What about the Beis Din?
Say it a little louder.
What about the Beis Din? Is that also required?
Again, we're talking about the members of the Beis Din, the High Court of Israel, come down to do the Medida, even if there's no need.
Say that they do the Medida.
Okay, you with me? In other words, the whole discussion here is about Medida. And it means this Kenim who are coming from Yerushalayim, they got to take a fast train, whether it's north or south, depending on where the slain body was found. And they got to be there personally. They cannot send agents to represent. They have to be there, even in a case where we know exactly which is the closest city. Because Medida, as we said before, is a part of the process of Egla Rufa. Now the reason for this apparently is that there are many rituals which are private in nature. I mean, if the Kohen Gadol goes in Lifnai V'Lifnir on Yom HaKippur, there's nobody there, not even the Malachim were there, he was alone. But there are other rituals that require publicity, and this is part of them. This is one of them. Egla Rufa requires, there's a public element of publicity. And if we need, so to speak, an excuse to make it public, we need the Medida, and we need to bring down this Kenim from Yerushalayim, from the Sanhedrin Agdol, to do the Medida. This is all a way of sort of waving a flag or blowing a foghorn and publicizing the ritual of Egla Rufa. Now I'm going to ask you the following question. I don't imagine that you'll guess the answer. But if you do, you deserve a pizza. Okay. If you like pizza. Why is Egla Rufa so public in nature?
Because the city that sent him off should have escorted him and should have shown him kindness and rahmanis and given him food and made sure that he made it outside of there.
Okay, so let's get this Kenim from that city, which is the closest city, to get down here to the Nachal and make that statement that, you know, we may have been guilty, but we tried to do whatever we could, etc., etc. We didn't let him out. Why is it necessary to publicize this? We want as many people to hear about it as possible.
Because they didn't get the pizza.
Oh, so the answer is that there are two dimensions to Egla Rufa. One is the kapara, you know, for the crime, but there's another dimension. And that is, we want to find the Rotzeach. And you and I know here in the state of Israel, if you follow almost any, unfortunately, any morning's news, that we're always looking for the culprit, for the terrorist.
They always find him here too.
In Mirtz Hashem. I say Amen to your bracha, Chanoch. Yeah, Halavai, we should always find him. Sometimes it takes a day, sometimes it takes a half a year, but we always track him down. But we need the help of the public. Do you remember from your youth, perhaps, that they used to have, you know, based on, let's say, they had a child or someone who had a vague memory of what the Rotzeach looked like, and they did a sketch?
Yeah.
And they used to publicize the sketch. If you find this guy who looks like that, please notify the police immediately. $50,000 reward. So in order to publicize that we are involved in an effort to track down the Rotzeach, we want to do as much pomp and ceremony, pomp and ceremony as we possibly can. So we want to get this Kenim down from Yerushalayim, and we want to make sure they do the Medida. And it's a whole thing. Again, I don't know in the case of an umpire in football. It's still not called an umpire. What's it called in
referee?
A referee in football who does the measurements. Yeah. I'm not sure if that has to be so public. Today, it's absolutely public. They even have videos, you know, and they replay the videos. It's a little embarrassing if you're a referee, because sometimes
you're overruled.
Yeah. You know, they're removing the element of human reliance. You know, there's an element of in baseball. It's like really scary because how does a human being? How can you see the difference? Sometimes it's literally millimeters. You know, millimeters. It's pretty embarrassing now that we have videos, right? But the idea is to get everybody involved over here, and this is a way of waving a flag. Please help us locate the murderer.
You also say that the perpetrator, the thief, the whatever, always returns to the scene of the crime.
Really? Is that true?
Yeah, that's what there's like a saying. Like
there must be a psychology here that I'm not aware
of. Probably because he wants to see, you know, what happened or what the mascara.
He's very curious.
Yeah, right. He's curious. So the fact is,
he's in the audience. He's somewhere. Yeah. He's one of, you know, you have that picture, and then you circle one face. You know, that's the murderer himself, right?
Yeah, it took many years for this for the murder of Eton Katz. It happened.
Till they track down the murder.
Wow. 30 years.
Wow.
So now the Gemara introduces another shita here in the Tanoim. This is Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. I don't know if you're familiar with him. And Masnisin our Mishnah, which requires medida, and that the Torah requires medida, but our Mishnah it says it's sufficient for the medida to just get the Sanhedrin involved. Which means the Zkenim come from Yerushalayim down in the train or north in the train, and they do the Medida. Is the Loki Haitana? It's against another Tana. There's going to be another Tana which we're going to learn from a Brisa that is not going to be happy with Zkenim alone. It's not enough. It's not sufficient that there be Zkenim that come down to implement this whole ritual of Medida. The sign we learned in a brisa, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov omer v'yotzuz keinecha v'shoftecha. He has a whole new take on the word v'shoftecha. He says the following: keinecha zo Sanhedrin. That's clearly a reference to Sanhedrin. But the word shoftecha in Chumash and in Tanakh in general has a much broader meaning. I would say that shoftecha, according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, we'll see how he proves it from Tanakh, means a leader. Skenecha means an elder who's brilliant, who's an expert, he's a member of the court. But Shoftecha are leaders. Like, for example, one of the books of Tanakh is called the Book of Shoftim. That's not a reference to the members of the court. That's a reference to leaders of the community. Now, who would you say is the ultimate leader of the state of Israel in halachic terms?
The Melech.
The Melech, exactly. But not only that, although the Melech has some sort of legislative, maybe veto power or some sort of high power, there's certain things that he can legislate even beyond the Sanhedrin, but there's another kind of power or authority which is not legislation in the societal sense, but it is control over the Beis HaMikdash, which is, of course, the center of the Jewish state of Israel. And that's the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol is also called Shoftecha, believe it or not. And this we're going to derive from a pasuk in the parsha that we're going to read in Mirtz Shem in 3 days. But first, let's see if the word Shoftecha, according to Rabbi Eliezer, how do you prove that that refers to the Melech? You see that the word mishpat, which is some sort of legislation, is generated by the melech himself. So melech and mishpat belong together. We have a bracha, ha-melech ha-mishpat, correct? God is the ultimate shofet, he's the melech. So the melech has to come down. He's had to get off his high chair there, his high kingly throne, and he has to come down to be there for the medida of the Egla Rufa. That's the Shita Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Not only that, the Kohen Gadol has to exit and terminate his avod in the Beis HaMikdash for this requirement, because he too is called Shoftecha. How do I know that the word Shoftecha includes the Kohen Gadol? Because in the parsha that we're going to read this Shabbos, it says Uvasal Hakohanim Alviim V'El Hashofet. The word Shofet here is a specific reference to the one who's in charge of the Kohanim and the Levim. Who's on top of the Kohanim and Levim? Who's going to over? Who is ultimately responsible to supervise the Kohanim and Levim in the Beis Hamikdash? It is none other than the Kohen Gadol. He's called in this pasuk a shofet. The Torah doesn't say V'el HaKohen HaGadol, but rather it says V'el HaShofet, because the Torah wants to teach us that the word shofet refers to not only the judges and not only the king, but to the Kohen Gadol as well. So it comes out according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, who has to come down to the Arifas Ha'egla and the Medidas Ha'egla. It's not just what? The members of the court, but the king and the Kohen Gadol as well. Our Mishnah says all you need is the Sekanim, whether it's three, whether it's five, but we don't need the Melech or the Kohen Gadol. So our Mishnah is against Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, and apparently our Mishnah understands that Shoftayach means judges in this particular context.
Rabbi, I don't want to throw a curveball on this, but how do we know what Rabbi Eliezer's swara on the number? It doesn't say three or five or seven.
That's going to be the next sugi boilahu. Because the Gemara, by the way, is going to suggest, but that's for tomorrow, that it could be that according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, we need all 71 judges. Because take a look at his language. He says, Kenecha zo Sanhedrin. He doesn't say representatives of Sanhedrin. You're done.
I was going to, well, maybe it'll come out now, but I was going to ask, it's the Melech and the Kohen Gadol in addition to the
correct. Because we have two words in the pasuk. It says V'yotzu Zkeinecha. Nobody denies that means the members of the Sanhedrin, or perhaps the entire Sanhedrin. We'll see that later. And then it says V'shoftecha in addition to Zkeinecha. And who are the Shoftecha in addition to Zkeinecha? Certainly you could say that the Zkeinim are called Shoftim. Why did the Torah have to say Vishoftecha? To tell you about two other individuals who within the matrix of Klal Yisrael are also called Shoftim. And those are none other than the Melech and the Kohen Gadol. You begin to see the pomp and the ceremony that's going on over here. We're so used to other religions, you know, Lahavdil Elf Avdolis. I don't want to go into detail, but they have such pomp and ceremony. Have you seen what goes on? I mean, with the clothing that they wear and everything else. Okay, Rabosai, now what I want to do with you is learn this Tosvis, Dibur HaMaschil Masnisen. Now, this Tosvis, Dibur HaMaschil Masnisen, is... where is it? Now I don't find it. Okay. Just one second. Okay. We'll find it. At any rate, the word Masnisen indicates that our Mishnah disagrees with Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. So Tosis wants to know, why does the Gemara assume that our Mishnah denies Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov? Isn't it possible that our Mishnah agrees that you need the Melech and the Kohen Gadol, but the subject of our Mishnah is how many Zekanim do you need from the Sanhedrin? And Tosfos says, I'll prove to you that this is the case. Alright. Just one second. The reason why I didn't find the Tosis is because I accidentally didn't turn the page. Okay. It's the top Tosis on your Dalet Amid Beis. So what's the proof of Tosis? The Mishnah at the beginning of Sanhedrin, there's only one Mishnah that we've been studying, says, Ein mosifin ala ir v'al hazoros el bebezdin shel shivim v'echad. That when we want to expand the boundaries of Yerushalayim, or the Azoros, we need a Bezdin of 71, and they will make the decision. This Mishnah is quoted in Masechta Shavuos, and the Gemara there says it's not enough to have the Sanhedrin of 71 judges. We also need the Melech. Not only that, we need the Navi, and we also need an Urim V'Tumim. So even if the Sanhedrin, in a unanimous decision, rule that we have to expand Yerushalayim, we cannot expand Yerushalayim just based on Sanhedrin alone. We need the partnership, the addition of the Melech, the Navi, and the Urim V'Tumim. In fact, the Mishnah says you need other things. There are other requirements. You need karbanos. Certain karbanos have to be brought. That's called the karban toda. You need the shear of the Levim. So in other words, the subject of our mission at the beginning of Sanhedrin is simply how many members of the court have to produce a certain mitzvah, have to make a certain status change or implement a certain ceremony or ritual. The mission is not talking about an exhaustive list of all the conditions that have to be met. So just like in the case of Ein Mosifin al Ha'ir, Ela Bebezdin Shel Shivim V'Echad, there's no mention of all the other requirements, because the mission is limited to address the question of how many members of the court we need to be Mosif al Ha'ir. So to hear when the Mishnah says, with regard to Egla Rufa, that we need either 3 judges or 5 judges, the Mishnah is not addressing all the other conditions that might be necessary to be met, namely perhaps we also need the Melech and the Kohen Gadol. So what we're going to try to do is we're going to try to offer 3 different answers to this kasha of Tosfos. One of them is implicit in Tosfos, but it's explicit in Rabbeinu Yonah, one of the great Rishonim of Spain. And he says the following. With regard to Hosafa al Ha'ir, expanding the boundaries of Yerushalayim, you could logically say that the Mishnah at the beginning of Sanhedrin does not list all the requirements, but just the requirements of the Zakenim of the Sanhedrin, because we have another Mishnah, Masechta Shavuos, which is going to address all these other conditions that are necessary for the process and effectuating an expansion of the bounds of Yerushalayim. But in the case of Egla Rufa, we don't have any other Mishnah. We only have our Mishnah at the beginning of Sanhedrin. And if the Mishnah thought that there were other requirements, it should have somehow been mentioned. There's a deliberate omission of any other requirements, and that is lafuke, to come to exclude the understanding and the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov that you need Melech and Kohen Gadol. That's answer number one. The second answer is offered by the Toras Chaim, one of the great rabbis about 2.5 centuries ago. And he says the following. The language of the Mishnah itself indicates that we don't need a Melech or a Kohen Gadol. Why? Because the Mishnah, in one breath, lists Smicha Sekenim, which is called Par Elim Dover Shel Tzibur, and Arifas Egla Rufa, without any breath in between. Now, in Smicha Sekenim, you don't need a Melech or a Kohen Gadol. Nobody questions that. All you need is this Kenim, the members of the Sanhedrin. And if in Egla Rufa we would require the Melech and the Kohen Gadol, as Rabbi Lezer insists, then the Mishnah should have added that, or in some way indicated that Egla Rufa is different than Smichas Kenim. But in one breath, the Mishnah says Smichas Kenim and Egla Rufa, indicating that they have the same halachic status and the same requirements. There's no additional requirements in Egla Rufa. And the third answer is offered by the Yad Ramah, as I told you many times, the super commentary in the Rishonim on Sanhedrin. And he says that you should read carefully the Mishnah when it talks about Egla Rufa and compare that language to the language of Hosaf al Ha'ir. With regard to Egla Rufa, the Mishnah says Egla Rufa Bishlosha. It sounds like the Mishnah is listing any necessary condition for Arifas Egla Rufa, Medidas Egla Rufa. It means Bishlosha, you need 3, or according to Rabbi Yehuda, you need 5. And there's no mention of Melech and Kohen Gadol. But in the case of Hosaf al Ha'ir, the Mishnah doesn't say Hosaf al Ha'ir Bishlosha, or Bisanhedrin, Bishiva V'echad, etc., etc. It just says Ein Mosif al Ha'ir Ela Bebezdin Shel Shivim V'Echad, meaning you shouldn't have less than 71 judges. It's not telling you that you can be Mosif al Ha'ir with 71 judges. It's simply telling you that the judge element in the equation should be no less than 71 judges. In the case of Egla Rufa, it says Egla Rufa B'Shlosha, implying that that's all you need.
But Mosif al Ha'ir is going to war, basically. I mean, it's a bigger Indian.
I don't know about war. I mean, we'll get to war later on. I mean, now we're talking about expanding the boundaries of Yerushalayim or the Azoros. You know, there were many different Azoros and different chambers. And sometimes there was a need, you know, as the population grew, you know, to expand the boundaries. You're asking me about Milchama. I don't know. I plead the 5th as far as Milchama is concerned.
The whole purpose was to
Now, I don't know. Again, you know, Reuven is telling me something about a Vav, and you're telling me something about a Melchoma, and I, you know, this is really embarrassing, you know.
No.
So, you know, some people say, why don't I answer all the questions that are raised in the Shia? The answer is because I don't know the answers. That's a simple answer to the question. Why don't I don't answer your questions? Okay, let's just read Ibayelahu. The Gemara has now a suffix. So again, for those who like to write words that are typical in Shas, this is a perfect example. Iboy lahu, they, lahu they, Iboy, they raised the question. I would have translated the following. They vacillated on the following point, back and forth. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov bechada polig, o betarte polig. What does the word polig mean? To argue. Right? Plugta is a debate. Is he debating? Is he rising up to debate against the Chachamim? Bechada, what's Chada?
One.
Or Betarte? In two. Is there a single machlokas, a mano machlokas, or a bio machlokas, or a double header machlokas? Clearly, Bimelech v'Kohen Gadol polig. That's for sure. He argues that you have to add the Kohen Gadol and the Melech into the equation. That's one machlokas. But it's possible that the Sanhedrin, in terms of the requirement of how many judges have to come from Sanhedrin down to the Medida, he agrees with our Mishnah, Ikrabi Shimon. Again, we don't know, as Chanok, you were asking before, it's an open-ended question. Does he accept Rabbi Yehuda require five, or does he accept Rabbi Shimon requiring three? Oh, Dilma, is it perhaps the case that there's a double machlokas? Not only does he argue about the addition of the Melech and the Kohen Gadol, but he argues about Sanhedrin Nami Pligi. He argues, even in terms of the judges, the Amar Kulei Sanhedrin Ba'inan. What does Ba'inan mean? We require. Ba'inan means require. Again, for those who like to write notes with key words, I can't tell you how many times in Shas the word Ba'inan is. I would assume if you did a word search in Shas for the word Ba'inan, you would run out of numbers. So we require the entire Sanhedrin, Rabosai, if you're talking about publicity, Ein Lecha publicity, Gedola Mizu, the entire Sanhedrin is going to close shop, and they're going to come down, again, I don't know exactly where they found the slain body, let's say they found it as, okay, I don't want to insult anyone from Beersheba, but let's say they found it as down south as Beersheba, alright, actually, from Yerushalayim to Beersheba is not so far, let's say they found it all the way on the northern border, Metula. So imagine the entire Sanhedrin. By the way, you'd want to get a ticket, buy your tickets in advance, because every last Jew in the state of Israel is going to want to be there to see the Sanhedrin as one entity travel all the way from Yerushalayim to the northern port of Petula. So order your tickets in advance, or they're going to start charging you double. And in addition, who's coming along for the ride? None other than the Melech and the Kohen Gadol. So if you're talking about publicity, I mean, this is publicity. The whole state of Israel is going to show up here. You know, if you had the cameras, I would even think Channel 12 is going to be there, you know. Okay, I don't want to get political here. So this is the possibility. Now, what led the Gemara to think that according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, not only do you require Kohen Gadol and Melech, you also require the entire body of the Sanhedrin, all 71, every last judge? Because if you take a look at his language, as we indicated earlier in the Braisa, it says Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, Zkeinecha Zu Sanhedrin. He doesn't say Zkeinecha Zu Chamisha Shebe Sanhedrin or Shlosha Shebe Sanhedrin. He identifies Zkeinecha as Sanhedrin, implying that you need the Pashtus, the entire Sanhedrin. That's a simple, straightforward interpretation of his words. Amar Rav Yosef Toshma. So Rav Yosef is now going to quote a very complicated Braisa, and based on this Braisa, he's going to conclude that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is going to require the entire Bezdin. Now, we don't have time to go through the entire complicated Braisa, but what we do have time for is an introduction. So if you can listen carefully to my introduction, it'll make life a lot easier tomorrow when we study this inside. It'll go really quickly and smoothly. In the parsha of Zaken Mamre, again, if I had a a blackboard, I would write on the blackboard, Zaken Mamre, the word Mamre is rebellious. And we talk about a Zaken, we talk about an elder, he's a member of the court. Now, every court has a dissenting opinion. That's why we need a Rove, and we're gonna the Omed Laminya, we have to decide based on majority. But once they take a minyan, they take a vote, and they issue a verdict based on the Rove, no one, I don't care who he is, he could be Moshe Rabbeinu himself, no one is allowed to disagree with the Bez. The Bez and HaGadol is vested with the final authority, and let's say it this way, again, there's a lot of lumdus here, that the minority, the miyud, is batel b'rov. It's as if it was a unanimous decision. Al pi halacha, there's no room for dissension here. And this stands in direct conflict with secular law. Because I can tell you, I took many courses in law, and all of law is based on dissenting opinions. So what you have is a decision on the part of the court. For example, the United States, it's the High Court, it's the Supreme Court. There's a decision of the majority. And then every single judge is invited to record his opinion. And there's a dissenting opinion. Now, over the course of time, with the development of law, the dissenting opinion very often becomes the majority opinion as society changes. In halacha, there's no such thing. In halacha, once a decision is handed down, then no one could disagree with that decision. The person who rebelled against that decision is called a Zaken Mamre. He's basically undermining the entire authority of the Beis Din HaGadol. What he does is, after the decision is made, he stomps out of the courtroom. He's really angry because they didn't accept his opinion. He was a member of the minority. He goes back to his city, and he rules the way he thought the rule should be. And he tells the person. Now, when the Torah introduces the parasha of Zaken Mamre, it explains all the different kinds of cases that were brought up to the High Court of Israel, because Zaken Mamre is only someone who disagrees with the High Court of Israel. So the Torah gives various disputes and various issues and sfeikos and doubts and halach that have to be brought to the highest court of Israel. So it says Bein Dom L'Dom, Bein Nega L'Nega, Dine Bisharecha, and it says in the pasuk, "The counter of Yolisa el Amakom Asher Bachar Hashem." This is what we're going to read in a few days' time. And what does it mean, Amakom Asher Yivchar Hashem? What's the place that God chose?
Harbayis.
And within the Harbayis, because Harbayis has a lot of space.
The Chodesh Chodeshim.
Well, okay, that's the highest. The high. I didn't mean to go that high, but I meant to say the Beis HaMikdash.
Oh, okay.
Beis HaMikdash. Now, outside the immediate wall of the Beis HaMikdash, there was something called the Lishkat HaGazit, and that's where, that was the chamber for the highest court of Israel. And Vakanta Valisa, because Eretz Yisrael is considered high, and Yerushalayim Harbayis is considered higher, so you have to come from wherever the dispute or the issue came up, and you bring it all the way up to the Lishkas HaGazis, the Kamta Valisa. Now let me ask you a question. This is a facetious kind of question. Do the members of the Sanhedrin live 24/7 for 365 days out of the year in the Lishkas HaGazis? Obviously not. They also need vacations, right? And if they're taking courses to be a tour guide, right? They also have to go, you know, up north and down south. So there's a place which is outside of Yerushalayim called Beis Pagi, and that's where the members of Sanhedrin used to go. We'll have to see exactly what kind of vacation they took. You know, it's Bein Hasvanim, so they took a trip to the Beis Pagi. Well, I'm just joking with you. But anyway, now the rebellious elder is arguing with them, but they're not in their chambers. So the question is, what's the status of the Sanhedrin outside their chambers? Do they retain their status as a Sanhedrin Agdola, in which case the Zaken Mamre will be what? He'll be Chayev. Or do we say no? The very moment, you know, it's like the robes, you know, when the judge takes off his robes, right, you can see a judge davening in your minyan. Right, he wears the same clothes that you're wearing on. Right, in England, the judges wear wigs. So the judge also at some point has to take off his wig. You know, his wife is sick of seeing him in the wig. So he comes home for breakfast, for lunch, for dinner, and he takes off his wig. So in halachic terms, at what point does the Sanhedrin, so to speak, strip itself of its uniform. It's not a matter of a physical uniform that they wear. It's the location. Because the Torah says, "Vakamtav alisa l'amokom." That's called amokom gorem. Amokom gorem means the place itself generates the status of Bezen HaGadol. So this elder, when he rebelled against them, he found them when they were outside their chambers, outside the Lishkas HaGadol, the Beis HaMikdash. They were in a place called Beis Pagi, you know, on the outskirts of Yerushalayim, and then he rebelled against them. So the question is whether or not he's chayav as a zokin mamre. Is he rebelling against the Sanhedrin? Because we don't know if the status of the elders is totally dependent upon their being located in the Lishkas HaGadol. And if they leave the Lishkas HaGadol, they forfeit their status as Sanhedrin. And hence, if he argues with them when they're outside of chambers, that's not considered a zokin mamre.
I'm confused. A decision was made by the Sanhedrin and he's going against the decision,
right?
But the decision was made outside of
Decision was made when they were in Sanhedrin, but when did he rebel against them? Right, there was time T1 when the decision was handed down, then there's time T2 when he decides to rebel against them. At time T2, the members of Sanhedrin were in Beis Pagi, they weren't in the Lishkas HaGadol, and he's high for that moment that he argues against them, that he rebels against their
faith. But the example, the original example you gave, he goes back to his community, right? And he institutes his own opinion.
Correct, but at the moment that he goes back to issue his verdict, you know, reflecting his own opinion, at that moment the Bezdin was not there.
So in
the Lishkas HaGadol.
So then he's not a mamre.
Correct. That's what the Bryce is going to establish. Wow. You guess what the Bryce is going
to say. So it becomes very difficult to actually become one, because you'd have to
synchronize it.
Wow. Okay.
Now, why do I say this is complicated? Because how many members of Sanhedrin actually checked out of the Lishkas HaGadol? All of them? Let's assume that some of them left and some of them are still there. So then, if some of them are still there, it could be that they would agree with the ruling of the Zokin Mamre. Right? Maybe they were also amongst the dissenters. Follow where it gets very complicated.
Can I ask one other question before you move on? When you said once a decision is made by Rove, you can't change, but presumably a future Sanhedrin could change it.
Right, so that's going to be a sugya, not today, I mean that's way down the line, that's called Gadol Mimenu, you need a higher court, and the question is, in the case of Sanhedrin, is there such a thing as a higher court? It's by definition the highest court in Israel. Okay. But let's say, for example, Sanhedrin Akhtano would issue a verdict, and then somehow the case came to the highest court of Israel, the highest court could overrule the lower court.
Right.
But in the case of Sanhedrin Agdola, I don't know if there's a higher court than Sanhedrin Agdola, so there's no possibility of overruling. Okay, Rav Moshe, so we'll stop here.
Okay.
And in Birtz Hashem, tomorrow we'll get back to the sugya of Beis Pagi.